everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies like My Date with the President's Daughter
and the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
So I know you've got a lot going on. But remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Welcome to the Tudor Dixon podcast. Today we are talking all things whales. I know that seems a little bit different, but as we talk about how the world is changing and weather and environment and climate and all of those things have been changing, obviously there have been a lot of people that have said, okay, what are the alternatives that we can use to try to make sure that we don't see a lot of these changes? And one of those alternatives that we've seen is windmills. This is something that we talk about a lot in Michigan, because there's been discussion in Michigan of putting windmills into Lake Michigan, and people are concerned about what that means. We've talked a lot about how the environment has been affected by manufacturing and how manufacturers in the United States have changed over the years to run cleaner manufacturing. And I know this because I come from a steel foundry, and I know the changes that we made over the years to make sure that we were running a clean factory. What I love about the United States is we're always innovating. We're always looking for ways to make things better, more so than other countries. And I think that's important to keep in mind when we have this discussion, that sometimes our innovations, while they may be different than what we're using at the time, they may not be the right answer, but that doesn't mean we should stop innovating and looking for the right answer. And if you look at the United States, like compared to China, we are doing things leaps and bounds beyond them when it comes to taking care of the environment. It's a constant and ever-changing battle. But one of the things that we have seen is that some of these environmental changes have other environmental consequences. It was interesting because just yesterday I was meeting with a guy, and I said, well, what do you think will happen with EV vehicles? And he said, you know, as we're doing more studies, and he was putting in some of the high powered chargers, and he said, now we're kind of backing off of that, because as we're doing more studies, we're finding that these high powered chargers for electric vehicles, when they charge them in 15 minutes, because of the amount of power that you have to put into the car, that heats up the battery. He said the batteries then don't last as long, but heating up the battery also causes gases, and we end up with environmental issues from what's coming off of the battery. So we're learning. We're always learning. That doesn't mean that there are people on a partisan issue, that there are people on one side or the other that are saying, don't do this. It's just, is it always the best thing in every situation? And that brings us to the whales. And I wanted to intro this that way because I want you to know that we're not talking about this from a partisan standpoint today. We are talking about this from the standpoint of our wildlife. And we have seen issues in the ocean where they've been putting these windmills with whales. So I am so excited that Amy DeCibio, she's a board member for ACK for Whales, and they are based in Nantucket Island, Massachusetts. I'm so excited that she's here to talk to us today, because I think we're all wondering, Amy, what's happening? We see all these things, all these articles and all these newscasts saying, oh, more whales washed up on shore, and we have beached whales and we have dead whales. What's going on? Give us a little background on this.
Well, first of all, Tudor, thank you very much for having me on. And it's interesting to be representing an organization that's far from Michigan, but yet this is going to be an issue everywhere in the United States. And I think you said the most important thing earlier, this should not be a partisan issue. There's nothing partisan about protecting the environment. Everyone should want to protect the environment. And I don't think what we really want to do is attempt to solve a problem that's potentially not solvable by this and create another huge problem. So our organization has sort of stepped in to this, as many other organizations have. ACT for Whales has formerly been known as ACT Residents Against Turbines. We tried to have a little bit more of a positive message. But, you know, and we do not call them windmills. These are wind turbines. These are power plants that are being constructed in our waters. And it's beyond just the size of an individual turbine. And, you know, in our case, there will be thousands of them up and down the East Coast. And the size of these things are huge. If you've seen turbines on shore, they're tiny. Ones off the coast are, you know, 1,100 feet tall to 1,100, and some even taller than that. Some of the models are even larger than that. So imagine the support and the pile driving that has to go into the bottom of the ocean to support something like that, and the girth of the turbine stanchions themselves. These are huge machines.
You know, you talk about that, and it's funny because you said they're huge. And in my mind, I'm thinking of all the windmill farms that I drive by in the state of Michigan as I go through the state. And we have, and Wisconsin has a really large turbine farm. I guess that's what we call them. We call them wind farms. But when you go past them, they're massive. And I think people, if you haven't seen these windmills or turbines, then I can see how you think it is a windmill. I see why you don't use that term, because a windmill is a small little fan, really, that is going around, and it kind of has this nostalgic feel. But these things are massive. I mean, just one blade is like the size of three football fields when they're on land. I think the other thing that people don't realize is that they're constantly making noise. So it's not, and that is disruptive to animals. It's not innocent. It's not out there doing nothing. We think of it as so natural, but it's not natural. It's a machine out there in the ground, and now we're talking about them in the ocean. Another thing to remember with these turbines is that they light up at night. And that is something that in Michigan, when farmers saw this and they looked out and here they had this beautiful piece of property, and then they see all these lights. Well, it bothers us from an aesthetic standpoint, but it really messes with our animals. It messes with our birds, with migration, with all of these things. And I think that we just don't talk about this. And the reason we're starting to find out that we don't get to hear as much information about this is that some of these groups that have always been in defense of animals, money always plays a factor, right? And there's a lot of money in this. So these corporations are getting big grants from the government, billions of dollars of grants from the government. And so some of these nonprofits that have always been, we've trusted, they've always been in defense of animals, they're now in defense of equipment that is hurting our animals. But in some cases, it does come back to money. But what you said about the turbines in the ocean, I was reading that some of them are taller than skyscrapers. And that is shocking to me.
Yeah, the height of the ones in the ocean, I mean, you know, if you've been to New York, you know, it's the height of the Chrysler Building. They are very tall. But just to loop back on something that you just said, yes, there have been tons, you know, billions and billions of dollars allocated from our U.S. government that, you know, is being allocated to these energy companies. And I think people should understand, in almost all the cases, at least off the East Coast, the energy companies that are doing this are foreign energy companies. So it's our tax dollars funding, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, and then that money is in turn being allocated to foreign energy companies. Secondly, you touched on something else that's very important, that the wind companies have been very strategic, and there has been a lot of money, yes, that's been placed into tried and true big NGOs, you know, Sierra Club, you know, some of the Audubon societies, Greenpeace, you know, and these tried and true organizations, many of the aquariums up and down the East Coast, I can speak of there, and maybe you'll see the same thing around the Great Lakes. But these are tried and true, trusted organizations that really impact decision making by both legislators and the public. So if the public is not hearing anything, and everybody seems to want clean, green energy, which of course we do, but make sure that this is clean, green energy before we make a huge pivot, because the damage is real.
Well, because something you said that I just want to kind of explain to our audience, because they may not understand. I mean, if you have heard negative things about oil drilling, you've heard about fracking, you've heard about the pressure that it puts on the earth, you've heard about all of these complaints. I ask you to think, what is different? When you think about the massive, to erect a building the size of the John Hancock Building in the ocean, imagine what you have to do to the earth. And we're not talking about one of these turbines. We're talking about 2,400 turbines. So this has to go into the ocean. And this is disturbing all of the wildlife that lives in the ocean. And we don't know what the impact of this kind of noise, this kind of vibration does to these creatures. But we do know that something is happening with the whales. The whales are just, to me, the biggest creature that we get to see. So we know because mm-hmm. we see it. So how many other creatures are in the ocean that this pounding and these, and I think the other thing we need to remember is they don't last forever. So when you hear about people, well, we have to move and drill for oil in another spot. Turbines last about 30 to 60 years. Then you got to rip it out and put a new one in.
Yeah, well, Tudor, I would say a couple things. It's beyond just the pile driving. They're all interconnected by high voltage cabling. So there's plow driving that goes on also, and it's extensive. And that, you know, it interconnects all of them. They go to substations, then the substations, you know, jack up the juice, and then high voltage cables have to land on shore, you know, come into communities, you know, somehow attached to the grid. So it's a very robust build out. I mean, to really, the fair term for this is it's a power plant. They're absolutely industrial power plants. There's kind of no other way to look at it. And it, you know, we firmly believe that this has been already, that just even the survey work, because before they even begin the construction, the survey work alone is, can be damaging to hearing for marine life. And, you know, we believe that that's what's caused a lot of the whales that have beached themselves along the East Coast over the last year. Well, last years, but this last year has been crazy. And the reality is the wind companies and the government know that this is risky business. The wind companies apply for incidental harassment authorizations, and they are granted them by the U.S. government agencies. So there is an expectation. They make a whole spreadsheet and say, we think we'll harm, you know, or harass this many minke whales. They go by species. This many North Atlantic right whales. And this many dolphins. This, they go up and down and come up with, you know, hundreds of thousands of species that will be impacted by this. So when these whales show up dead along the beach, it's disheartening at the very least, but disturbing that everyone, the powers that be all turn around and say, well, you know, there's nothing to see here. This can't be that, you know, caused by, you know, the survey work or the construction of an offshore power plant. Well, I would say that we think otherwise. And, you know, we work with a coalition, Save the Right Whales Coalition. It's an organization that encompasses many groups up and down the East Coast. There was a report, we did a report, an actual study, and it shows a very high correlation between whale deaths and the traffic, the extra traffic that's being caused by offshore wind work. So, you know, we think that at least we should be putting these projects on hold and taking a much better look and to see what's happening.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit consumercellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Well, there has to be a discussion out there that pollution comes in more than one form. A few years ago, I was at a it was a National Geographic presentation on light pollution. And to be honest, I was there with a bunch of Republicans, and I could tell they walked in and they're like, the word pollution. And people just get kind of turned off by that and don't understand it. They don't understand pollution. By the end of this discussion, it was amazing. This man had done such a beautiful job of explaining what was happening. He was like, you know, I take pictures for a living, and I've watched the migratory patterns of birds and bees. And he said, because we're using these new LED lights, we have this light pollution, and it is confusing our birds, but also our honeybees. And so because our honeybees are getting confused, they're not pollinating our crops. And at the end of it, and, you know, people were going, oh, wait a minute, that's something different than what we understood before. We thought light pollution meant it's just hurting our eyes, you know, or we have too much light, we're not seeing the stars. Never really got a full understanding of the definition of that. And I remember I went up to him afterward and I said, you know, you said things that I don't think any of us have ever thought about. This is putting our food supply at risk. And he said, do you think if I explained it in those terms, people would understand it in a different way? And I was like, I think no one has truly explained these terms, because one side or the other on the political aisle gets triggered by them. And he was like, it's a simple fix. We're not asking you to get rid of lights. We're asking you to go back to yellow lights rather than white lights. And certain towns have actually gotten on board with this, and it has changed the natural environment there in a big way. I look at this as something similar, this noise pollution. I mean, this is a form of pollution. Even though we think, okay, this is a new form of getting energy, there are side effects that are maybe not worth the new form of energy. I mean, if it's killing our ocean life, it's not worth it.
I agree. And I think very interesting story about the bees. You know, this is definitely disruptive to the entire ecosystem. And that's a case in point. You're talking about a tiny, you know, a little small bee, and what, how important they are for everyone, right? So, you know, not just humans, but animals, all animals, and the environment as a whole. And this, you know, the lights will be significant. The other thing to think about here is, yes, there's a lot of pollution that is involved. You see, you know, you have lots of, you know, wind turbines on land. And I don't know if you've ever done sort of a quick inventory to see, you know, are they all moving all of the time?
No, you know, they're not.
Right. And are some of them broken? And the thought that they're going to live 30 to 60 in the ocean is not even that they don't even pretend to use those numbers. The lifespan is more probably 25 years. And we even think that's a push, at least in the Atlantic Ocean.
Is that because of corrosion or?
Yeah. Yeah. They'll take a, yeah. And, you know, what
so how do you keep them safe from oil leaks?
Yeah. I mean, they all have, you know, they're all filled with thousands of gallons of synthetic oil for lubrication. There are a lot of toxic materials in a turbine and, you know, not to mention the constant vessel traffic that will be out there constructing over decades and maintaining. So you, as I was saying, you see the work that has to happen to keep turbines on land, maintenance up, you know, we'll see what happens in the ocean. And if a turbine blade falls, what happens? It goes to the bottom of the ocean. Is someone digging that out? You know, there are a lot of big questions, and it just really seems like this entire idea has been advanced very quickly, very little beta testing. I mean, this hasn't, you know, it's shocking that they haven't said, let's put out 10 turbines out at sea and let's see what happens and let's see what the impacts are. Instead, it's pedal to the metal. Let's put in hundreds and thousands of them, and then we'll see, and then we'll test. And, you know, off Nantucket, and I know your audience is Michigan, but there's a critically endangered species, the North Atlantic right whale is there. There are fewer than 340 species left, and they are building this turbine power plant smack in the middle of where their safe haven is. It's not responsible.
Whales but this is really where I say these role. Groups that are fighting you yeah. on this, I mean, there have been some of these groups like Sierra Club who've come out and attacked you on this. These are the groups that in the past would have always been the ones out there saying, we are not going to take an endangered species and kill them off. We're not going to take that chance.
Yeah, you know, and it's been really, it's been discouraging to see some of the press and the accusations that have come our way. I mean, it's almost, if it wasn't so discouraging, it would be funny. You know, the thought that we're being funded by big oil and gas, when in fact, the wind companies themselves are typically big oil and gas. This is a new frontier for them. Many of them have moved forward. You know, we haven't taken a penny from that. Most of the groups up and down the East Coast are very grassroots organizations, and we're stepping in because the tried and true organizations that do have funding, and many of them have funding, as we said, from the wind companies, are not doing what they say they're going to do. So it's been really, you know, that's probably been the hardest part of it, is sort of the reality of, wow, things don't really work how you think they work. And the guy with the biggest bag of money wins. And it's so really true.
Shame.
Yeah, it's really, it's just terrible. And I can't even imagine these in the Great Lakes. And that would just be a sin. I mean, it's bad enough where we
But it's the same. I mean, that I think is the thing that shocks me the most. You know, when you were, we used to take a lot of road trips when I was a kid. And I remember driving past the power plants where you would see all of those blinking lights. And I, in my mind, when I was a kid, I would think about Batman, you know, this is like Gotham City. And I cannot imagine looking out at the ocean and seeing that, but it's the same when I drive past these wind farms, it's just blinking lights. And I think that, you know, people made fun of Donald Trump when he came out and he said, they're killing birds. And, you know, I don't think that there's been anybody who's come out and actually kind of exposed what's happening with them. And I think it's easy to go, oh, that, how silly, you know, but in Michigan, we've had a huge problem on our farms where they've killed bats, because I think it's maybe a similar situation with the sonar, and they can't judge where the propellers are coming down, and they're killing bats. We have a massive rodent problem then with our food supply. So the bats go in and they kill the pests, right? So the bats are very important to the whole ecosystem of farming. And now our farmers have their neighbor's land is being sold off because, again, these companies come in with massive amounts of money and they're like, we'll buy up your property and you can stop farming and you're set for life. And it's very tempting. And then these folks take it. They put up a huge wind farm. That's what, that's what we call it, a farm. And then the bats get killed off and it hurts the environment for the farmers around. I mean, there really are a lot of side effects. And that's why I just don't understand why we can't step back and take this approach of there's got to be, I say this for other things too, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yeah, you're bringing up something that I'm going to take a step further about the bats. So we attended a there was a summit in Hyannis, Massachusetts, and people from up and down the East Coast came to speak about the impacts of offshore wind on, you know, not just on the ocean, but also on land. But one of the big concerns in the ocean is that the turbines themselves emit, you know, EMFs are emitted. And what is the impact on that on animals, but also the impact that that the turbines themselves have on radar. And it is shown to compromise radar. So there are safety issues. The Coast Guard has been very clear that, you know, we don't go out and our work is typically in the water when conditions are poor and there's low visibility. That's when accidents happen. But part of it is because of the radar compromisation, but also just the turbines. Like, we're not bringing a helicopter down in a turbine field. Okay. Similarly, there could be national security issues, et cetera, et cetera. That all needs to be addressed much more. And I think part of the problem is some of the folks that are nervous about this are, I think of many people, this is just the era that we are in. People are afraid to speak up because their job may be compromised. Perhaps they're in an appointed position by someone who really wants this. On the East Coast, you know, we know that this is a big Biden administration agenda item, and this has been a, you know, many of the states on the East Coast have jumped on board, both sides, you know, both parties have jumped on board on this wholeheartedly. And I think mostly out of, I hate to say this, but out of really not understanding the issue fully. I don't like to use the word ignorance, but somewhat on that. And I think, and I go back and blame again the environmental groups that work almost like lobbyists, that they teach us. And if they're afraid, you know, and their concerns are real, you know, and nobody brings this to the forefront, the decision makers aren't fully equipped. We don't expect our legislators to be marine biologists or energy experts, but for crying out loud, let's put all the smartest people in the room and have a robust discussion before we make such huge decisions. But instead, it's been pedal to the metal.
What a misnomer to call it clean energy when we see it hurting so many different areas. Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
What you are seeing on the East Coast is certainly what we're fearing here in Michigan, because Lake Michigan does have a massive amount of wind. It would be on paper, it looks good, right? And we actually have a legislator who recently put in a bill that would take away local control. And I was talking to a gentleman yesterday about this, and he said, yeah, so if my neighbor decides to sell their land and put up a wind farm, then my local community can't do anything about it. It comes from the capital. And this gentleman also just so happens to own a solar company. But to your point, it's the people with money. It's the people with power. They then change the laws. And it's all under the guise of clean energy. Again, like I said, that is the wrong name. And I think that we are so afraid of coming out and saying, hey, we're against this, because people will say, you don't love the environment. No, no, quite the opposite. It is that I do love the environment, and I don't know how this is going to affect it and what permanent damage could be done, because we know as humans, we've done permanent damage before. And nobody can say we have not left a footprint on this earth. We certainly have. So why not be incredibly careful before we leave another irreversible footprint?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think, you know, again, it's been hard to, I believe it's been very hard to have this. This is the overall global or the national climate that we've had, right? That anything that's controversial, it's been hard to speak up. There's a lot of shaming that goes on. So if you decide to say, you know, we've been called, you know, you're just climate denying, gas loving freaks, right? I mean, that couldn't be further from the truth. We are concerned about the environment. So let's not, you know, try to fix one problem, which may not really fix anything, by the way, because I also think that's important. You know, when you keep reading why we're doing things, the answer is to meet, you know, Michigan's climate goals or Massachusetts climate goals. But what are the climate goals based upon? Are these climate goals, what are they actually going to do? Why don't we take a step back and say, what are we trying to solve for? And if it's climate change, then let's see in the data where we show that this actually will move the needle on climate change. Unfortunately, you don't really see that. But we've all made climate goals. And so, you know, we're sticking to them come hell or high water. I don't think that that's responsible. And we should be able to pivot if we start to head down a path and people start to push back and we start to see evidence that, you know, dead animals, for example, when we know that that could be a risk. Why don't we pull back and put these things on pause? But, you know, I don't think it works that way. Once the government's allocated money to do something, they're going to spend it. And
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been the same for us here in the Midwest. It's been kind of the same discussion over electric vehicles, because there have been some groups who have said, well, you know, the chemicals used to make the batteries are not great. The amount of energy that it takes to build the car is three times what it was to build a gas powered car. To charge the batteries, now we're hearing that there's potentially gases coming off the batteries. And this is not to say, oh, we can't do this. It's to say, in the midst of innovation, when you're still figuring things out, when the federal government says it's go time, we're putting billions of dollars into it, sometimes then all of those tests that would normally happen, they take their foot off of the brakes there and say, okay, well, we've got the go. And that to me is dangerous, because then we go off in a direction that could, like I said, be potentially dangerous. You hit on something else. And before I let you go, I want to talk about this, because you talked about the size of these propellers or whatever we're calling them that come off of the
blades,
turbines. What did you call them?
The blades.
Yes. And I think that from the outside perspective, some people look at these and they go, oh, it's all metal and it's all something that it can just be melted down or reused, but it's not. It's fiberglass. It's a combination of materials that cannot be recycled. And so you talk about one of these blades falling into the ocean. What is actually Once that goes into the ocean, how quickly does the salt water start to eat away at that? What kind of chemicals are going into the ocean when you have something that is made from a fiberglass material, which we know is highly dangerous? A carcinogen for humans? What could it do to ocean life? And what is the base made of? What exactly are we putting in the ocean? Because we know on land, these cannot be recycled. We're taking them out to Wyoming. We're digging these massive holes that are like the size of 3 football fields and then burying them. How is this a good thing?
I know. I agree. The composition of a turbine is steel, carbon fiber, as you mentioned, or fiberglass on the blades. There are lots of rare earth minerals and magnet minerals in the rotor. Toxic, almost the entire thing is non-recyclable. So what do we do with all of these things? And they're just enormous. These are just huge machines. As I mentioned, they're filled with lubricating oil. They are connected, interconnected by high voltage cabling that gets plow driven under the ground. And these are big, huge cables. The amount of damage that happens at the bottom of the seafloor is unbelievable. And then they have to, travel, miles and miles to land. It's just really environmentally, to me, I just feel like this is a very bad trade. Wind is not a dense product. Meaning it requires a lot of land to produce a relatively small amount of energy. Conversely, and I'm not espousing any kind of energy. I'm not an energy expert. But for example, nuclear would be the opposite. It's a very dense product. You could, put a small nuclear reactor on your property that could power, a lot of homes. So it requires less earth destruction. And I think because these are in the ocean or in one of the Great Lakes, that they're not really in anybody's backyard exactly. So that I think the public has not had a chance to really think this through very well. But it will impact everyone. As you said, there's lighting. They'll be out there for vessel traffic, for air traffic. They'll be lit all the time. That is damaging to both animals and, frankly, to humans. And I think that one last thing I would just say is that the human environment matters also. It's important to be able to sit at the Great Lakes and look out and just see a horizon, or at the ocean and just see a horizon. That's important for the human environment to have that ability as well. And, it's why we protect things. I don't know the geography in Michigan well enough, but Nantucket, for example, the entire island is a National Historic Landmark. This changes that. Would we stick these, in the middle of Williamsburg, Virginia, or would these stick these around the Grand Canyon? We should treasure the things that we have and really think these things through really well before we make such a pivot. My guess is a lot of these projects will get built. And I don't think that in 50 years, we're going to be having this discussion about offshore wind. I think we'll have moved on. There'll be a better technology. I think it'll be before that, frankly. But, and then what? Who's paying to pull all of these things out of the ground, and where are they going? I can tell you that, they have waived the mandate for some of these projects. Certainly the first one that's being built off Nantucket right now, they've waived the mandate for the wind companies to escrow funds to decommission. So who's going to do that? They say it costs as much to decommission as it does to build. And where do we put them? So I just think this is a kind of a fool's errand, an expensive to the environment and an expensive financially fool's errand for now.
And I think to your point, as I was reading about this, when I started reading about the amount of lighting that it takes to put them in, because you have to have massive ships, and I don't think people really understand. It's not like someone goes out there on a dinghy and puts a light post in the ocean. You have to have massive ships. It's going to be a huge building process in the ocean. So you're polluting the ocean with the ships that are out there. You also are spending a massive amount of time out there with lighting that changes the whole course of the ocean. The ocean is used to being, the creatures in the ocean are used to the darkness at night and to be able to live their lives the way they always have. This is going to have a huge effect, and it doesn't happen overnight. And then you come and decommission, and it's the same thing. And that's what made me think of the gentleman from National Geographic who said, hey, when we put up these big white lights, it has a great effect on our environment that you aren't thinking about. And I think to myself, well, Why wouldn't this do the same thing in the ocean? There's so many reasons to just think about this, to not. And again, I just want to reiterate, this is not a partisan discussion. This is about protecting wildlife. And you talked about the human aspect of the need to come out and see the ocean, to decompress, to have that mental space and that absorbing nature. We know how important that is. But I just, last thing, I know I said last thing, but last thing I want to say, or I want to ask you about, when you talk about the amount of voltage that is coursing through all of these lines and all of these big turbines out in the ocean, that seems to me like there would be a constant vibration out there. So even though, I mean, you have the turbines moving, but even as that's coursing underground, what is that doing?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't have a lot of research on that. We do know, we have seen a study that was done in the UK with offshore wind and the EMFs, the electromagnetic frequency that comes off that type of cabling. And they've attributed the malformation of lobsters that they're seeing to that. You know, these animals live on the bottom of the ground and these EMFs are being emitted. The cabling can't be buried very deep, which is odd. But when you think about it, they emit a lot of heat, and so they need to be cooled by the water. And so they're really only 5 or 6 feet deep, which means they are fairly close to the surface. Hmm. And they also, the substations emit, I can't remember the number of gallons, but in order to keep things cool, part of the process, and again, I'm not an energy expert, I don't know exactly how this works, but you know, daily, like millions of gallons of really hot water water is cycled through the substation and then dumped into the ocean. Much too warm. I mean, we're worried about, you know, global warming and temperatures rising in the ocean for animals, but we're just going to do it ourselves and it'll be very, very warm. Yeah. So it's all of these concerns, you know, it's sort of one thing after the next. And, you know, our organization did file a lawsuit, I don't know if we mentioned that, against, you know, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management and NOAA Fisheries, the agencies that are responsible for the permitting process for the Vineyard Wind Project, which is the nation's first offshore wind project, and that one is off Nantucket. We were in federal appeals court 2 weeks ago, and we're hoping to press forward with this. You know, we just think that they, in a nutshell, the lawsuit is, hey, U.S. government, you're not really following your own endangered species and environmental protection laws like you should be. And, you know, that things needed to be more thorough. So we're really hoping to get some traction there and have everybody stop. You know, what we'd really like is just people to stop and take a better look at all of this. You know, they've never considered the impacts, the cumulative impacts. There will be a lot of projects that occur in that area. And you're saying that it sounds like there will be 2,400 turbines, you know, that is a big area. Off the Atlantic, they're putting these things, each one will take about a square mile. So you're talking 2,400 square miles of, I mean, think about that.
Good grief.
That's like twice the state of Rhode Island, what you're talking about there. These are
how many whales has it been so far that you've seen?
It's been up and down the coast. Nantucket would be a small target to hit, so it's a little teeny island, but these whales migrate. The North Atlantic right whale, for example, it goes up and down the coast these last 340. So New Jersey and New York have sort of been ground zero, it seems like. Lots of them have shown up there over the last year, just way too many. And, you know, these are huge beasts. They play a very important role in the ecosystem, in the ocean. They actually are Mother Nature's way of sequestering carbon dioxide. Whale feces are really feed the basis of the entire food chain out there. So they play a really vital role. You were talking about the bees. These are a big species with big species with little feces or lots of little feces, but that really are important. So, I think we need to really consider the impacts here. When you start messing with Mother Nature on one end of it or another, the ramifications can be enormous. And, I think we just need to be more responsible. And I'm really, glad that you're taking a look at this in Michigan. And You know, we've been contacted from by groups in California, from the Gulf area. This is a concern all over the country. And I think that, you know, it's important that the discussion continues.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing. I know you've called it a David versus Goliath issue, and it absolutely is. And I know the attacks that you guys are under. I know they've gone after you, and they've said terrible things, and they're trying to get you shut down. And it speaks volumes about your character that you don't stop. Amy DeCibio, I'm so grateful that you came on today, and I'm so grateful that you continue to fight for this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tudor. It was a pleasure. Have a good day.
Yes, thank you. And thank you all for joining us on the Tudor Dixon Podcast for this episode and others. As always, you can go to TudorDixonPodcast.com and subscribe right there, or head over to the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and join us next time on the Tudor Dixon Podcast. Have a blessed day.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.